This week's Tedra, Parshas Shoftim. Parsha starts off, Shoftim b'shotrim, diten lachal, chol sharecha. You should place in your gates, Shoftim, which are judges, Shotrim, which are like policemen. So there's one word here which seems extra. And that is the word lacha. Could have just said, Shoftim b'shotrim, diten, you should place these judges and officers. Why the word lacha for you? So Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal says it's coming to teach us that besides the general shofet v'shofet we're familiar with, that of judges and policemen in our normal sense of the term, here the Torah is telling you one also has to make a shofet lacha for yourself. In other words, you have to judge yourself to see. Look at yourself, examine your maisim to see if they are proper. That's the idea of a shofet. And also, you also have to be a shoter for yourself, a policeman. And that is to make sure you put into action that which you judge. In other words, you judge yourself. You see, oh, I have to work on me to X or Y. And then you have to be a shoter to be a policeman, to watch over yourself, do whatever you can to implement this, to do what to put those adjustments into action. There's an interesting idea I heard one from Shlomo Levinstein Shlita, and it brings out this idea quite nicely. It goes way back to towards the beginning of the Torah, Parshas Lech Lecha, where we find Sarah Imenu. She was barren, right? Didn't have any children, and she decided to give her maidservant Hagar to Abraham, her husband, in order to that she should have children. If she couldn't have children, at least let Abraham marry Hagar and have children through her. So the pasuk says, "V'tomer Sarai el Abraham, hinei not Sarani Hashem yiledet." Says Sarah said to Avram, "Look, Hashem stopped me from having children. So bona el shiv chasi. So come to my maidservant. Ulai ibanem imena." Now, there's one conjugation which doesn't fit in here. That is ibane. Ibane means I will build or be built mimena from her. What should it have said? She just said, "Look, I can't have any children. It's a shame. Why should you not have any children? So take Hagar, my maidservant, in order that you should be built from her, through her." Why ibane? Even I will be built. She's not going to be built. Sarah's not going to be built from her. Hagar's going to be built with Abram. So the word ibane needs explanation. Should have said tibane, that you should be built through her. It's a question which we have to answer. We'll get back to it, Yirtzeh Hashem, shortly. But, first, let's see a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos, Adaf Kuf Kaf Aleph, mentions the following Maisa. It says, Tanya, Amar Rabban Gamliel. Gamliel said the following, Pamacha Saisi Malech Basvina. Once I was traveling in a boat, I saw another boat which capsized, was literally broken, and Vaiti Mitzta'er, I'll tell me Chacham Sheba, Umenu Rabbi Akiva. And I knew on that boat was Rabbi Akiva, and I was very upset because I saw this boat go down, and Rabbi Akiva was on this boat, and I thought, oh, that's the end of Rabbi Akiva, and I was very upset. However, he continues, Ukashalisi Biyavasha. But when I got on to dry land, Bava Yashav Lifanai Balacha, I saw Rabbi Akiva there and he was sitting there learning in front of me. So I was shocked. I thought, I didn't think Rabbi Akiva would have survived that, the ship. So Amarti Lo, I said to him, Bini, Mihalacha, how did you get out of there? I saw your boat went down, your ship went down, Rabbi Akiva. How did you get out of that? So Amar Li said to me the following, Daf shel Svina nizdamen li, a board of the ship I came across the board of the ship, you know, a piece of wood. The chol gal v'gal sheba alai nenesi lo rushi. And every time I grabbed onto this board, and every time a gal, a wave came towards me, I bowed down my head, I bent my head down so that the wave should go over my head. So we have to, before we go on and see the next line in the Gemara, which is going to concern us, to understand what's going on. So simple pshat would be, Rabbi Gamaliel was saying, well, how did you get saved? So Rabbi Akiva was explaining him, look, I was holding on to this piece of board, and now what was I going to do? If I'm going to go along with the waves and let the waves push me, and so then they'll just push me away from where I'm going, towards where I want to get, towards dry land. However, if I'm going to swim against the tide, against, you know, that's also how you're going to fight against the tide. So what I did was when I was grabbing this board, I swam against the tide. When I saw the wave come, I just bowed my head so the wave would go over me, and then I can continue going. So if we were asked for a maskana, a conclusion, what would I say? The Gemara would say, the conclusion is that this is how you have to swim. It's a swimming lesson. However, that's not what the Gemara answers. Amarti ba'otosha, kama gedolim divrei chachamim b'shamru, mayim sheyesh lem sof muteras, mayim shen lem sof asura. And then the Gemara goes on and says, brings the Maisa once again, a different version, and says that from here we see that if Rishayim, get the wording of the Gemara over here, it says that from here we see that im yavo rishayim al adam yinanea berosho. Right? So said the Chachamim. That if rishayim come on a person should bow his head. What is that supposed to mean? What are you, rishayim? What has rishayim got to do over here? So the idea is that Rabbi Gamliel wasn't asking him about swimming and how did you get saved. That wasn't what he was concerned about, is in what schus were you saved? And one merit, Rabbi Kiva, how are you? What merit did you have that you weren't drowned? And what was his answer? His answer was that I bowed my head when Rishayim would come against me. Meaning, it's what we call the Gemara and Lashon of Chazal is Mavir al Midosa. And I didn't stand, I bowed my head, I didn't stand ground and fight against people that did bad against me. I would just bow my head and mevater, as we say. So that's the schus that I was saying. I wasn't interested in the swimming lesson. I mean, Gamliel wants to know what schus. And every kid says, you know what schus? My life was saved because I was Mavir al Midosai. And I bowed my head against Rishayim, meaning I never stood my ground against Rishayim. They wanted to do bad things against me. I just accepted. I didn't put up a fight. And in that schus, Rabbi Kiva said, I was saved. We see a number of times, in fact, that that's how the Gedolim are. Right? They're not haughty people that want to use their greatness against others. They're very, very humble individuals. We have Maisa with the Chafetz Chaim. Rav Shach, that's all I used to say. That the Brisker Rav would comment on the Chafetz Chaim, said an interesting thing. He says, you know, this, everybody always talks about, to this day, the tzidkis of the Chafetz Chaim, right? What a tzaddik he was. He was so righteous. However, we don't find the Chafetz Chaim to be known as talked about as a gaon, as a genius. But he surely was. I mean, to this day, we're were using his Mishnah Berurah as the authoritative voice in halacha, etc. He was anybody who learns the Mishnah Berurah can see how a tremendous gaon he was, genius in Torah. However, he was more known as being a tzaddik. So the Brisker Rav would explain why that's the case. He said because the Chafetz Chaim, he was so, as we said, so humble, and he didn't want to be to use the Torah, his Torah knowledge, to get kavod, to get honor, whatever. So therefore, he says he would mistami daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu that he shouldn't be known as a gaon. And we know Yiratzon Yer Yavyase that the Kadosh Baruch Hu answers the prayers, the desires of the righteous. And therefore, Chafetz Chaim is Tamad David Hashem. I don't want people to know my genius because I don't want to use the Torah as a device for my honor, etc. And Hashem answered his prayers, Mistama, and that's why he was not known as a genius, as a go. So the obvious question: well, if that's the case, so what? Why wasn't he known? Why was he known as a tzaddik? Why didn't he David Hashem that he shouldn't be known as a tzaddik either? So that answers the Brisker Rav, that he was so humble, right, that he didn't even look at himself as a tzaddik. So he didn't dove it to Hashem, please don't let people know what a tzaddik I am, because he didn't think of himself as a tzaddik. So he didn't dove it for that, and as a result, Hashem didn't answer his prayers, and no prayers to answer, and therefore he became known to this day as a great tzaddik. Similarly, in our day and age, find also our gedolim, this humility, sincere humility, that Rav Dan Segel, he recalls that once he went in the era of Rosh Hashanah to visit Rav Arnleib Steinman Shlita, and he wanted to get a bracha from him, Yom Adin, era of Rosh Hashanah, he wants to get a bracha. So he comes in to Rav Steinman, and before he had a chance to say, to ask him for a bracha, Rav Steinman says to Rav Segel, "Oh, Rav Don, please give me a bracha. Please give me a bracha." He has a bracha. He goes, "I should give you a bracha." He says, "Yes, please give me a bracha that I should be a Yehudi Tov. I should be a good Jew." And he started crying. So that's our gedolim, right? He has the bracha. He was supposed to be giving the bracha. That he was asking a bracha was bracha. He should be a good Jew. Right, we think we're good Jews, or we're all good Jews, But the Gadol HaDor is worried that he himself isn't a good Jew. That's the godless of our tzaddikim. Also, similarly, the Chafetz Chaim, he was sees something very interesting in his work, the Mishnah Berurah, that the Mishnah Berurah, I think, never brings in his parish any of the gedolim of his generation. Right? There are other gedolim, and he doesn't bring them in his parish, in the Mishnah Berurah, the Be'er Halacha. Right? He doesn't comment on, the Chaim Brisk, etc. He doesn't say that the Brisker Rav said this. No, he brings, of course, the earlier Mephorshim. But he doesn't bring the gedolim of his generation. There's only one exception. The whole Mishnah Berurah is only one exception. That's in Hilchas Shofar in Siman Tafkuf Pehe, in the Bir Halacha. He talks about where the Rama says that it's good to blow on the right side of your mouth when blowing the shofar. So says the Mishnah Berurah over there in the Bir Halacha, Shamati Mimir Simcha Kohen, from the Or Samech, Mir Simcha Midvinsk. He says, I heard from him a reason for it, etc., etc. It's the only time in the Mishnah Berurah, this whole work, that he mentions a gadol of his generation, that's the Or Sameach. Agav, as a side point, who the Or Sameach was, it's a story recalled by a total non-religious person, and he remembers when he was a boy, he was from Dvinsk, where he was from the community over there with the Or Sameach. And he says he'll never forget that one winter, it's actually the spring, following winter, what happened, there was a river that was flowing, and that was a means for when the snow would melt in the spring, So the it would flow into the river and then out. Away. So this one winter, for some reason, it was a very cold winter, went in late into the spring, and the river was still frozen when down below, when the snow on the mountains was melting. So normally it would flow into the river and goodbye. However, since the river itself was frozen, there's no place for the snow to go. So it would just it melted a tremendous amount of water that couldn't drain into the river, and so it built up, and many areas around were flooded, terribly flooded, flooded and destroyed homes, etc. Anyways, sure enough, the water is getting greater and greater and greater, and we're approaching the vents. It's coming into the city, and the people were devastated. What's going to be? It's going to be the end of our city. It's going to be flooded. So what they did was they put up a huge mound of sand, and to hold, like a dam, you know, to hold the water back. Anyway, one Shabbos morning, or calls this person, says, I was in shul, it's a boy, and somebody runs in the middle of Shachar. He comes, runs up to, and says, quick, we have to evacuate. Our city's going to be flooded any minute now, was what happened. The water is climbing up this mound of sand, and any moment it's going to go right over and flood the city. So Rav Meir Simcha heard this. He didn't say anything. He just, with his talus on, he started marching out of the shul. Everybody's wondering what's going on, where is he going? So they followed him, and he walked all the way to the man-made dam, this mountain of sand. And he walked over there, and he climbed this mountain of sand. He got to the top, again, not saying anything, everybody just watching. He looked down, stared intently at the rising water, which was about to flood the entire city. He just looked at it for a few seconds. All of a sudden, there heard a tremendous boom, which was the river, the ice in the river breaking. It broke, and all the water then receded, went down into the river, and the town was saved. That was Rav Meir Simcha. Anyways, back to our maaseh at hand. So we mentioned that the only time the Chafetz Chaim mentions Gadol was Rav Meir Simcha. Why? So they say there was a gzeira of the Malchus in that time, his time, against the yeshivas, and the Rav Meir Simcha made a emergency meeting to see what to do about this gzeira, and so he made a meeting of the gedolim in his house. So the Chafetz Chaim wasn't invited. Stami wasn't invited again because he was very low-key and they didn't look at him as being a gaon or whatever we mentioned before. So he wasn't invited. But he had heard about this meeting and he went there himself. So he came, knocked on the door and opened up the door, and Rav Meir Simcha looks at him and says, what are you doing here? Who and nobody invited you? So he says, well, I heard that they're operating on my sister, and that's why I came. So they asked, what's your sister's name? So he quoted the Pasuk in Mishle, Amar l'chokhma achosiyat. That chokhma, wisdom, is called my sister. In other words, you're saying, I heard that the great rabbis are, you know, just using their chokhma over here, and they're like operating on sister in the pasuk is called Chochma, so I came to see what's going on. Anyways, the Chafetz Chaim felt that probably Rav Meir Simcha was very uncomfortable because he didn't invite the Chafetz Chaim, and he was asked him, what is he doing here? So how did the Chafetz Chaim take quote unquote revenge from Rav Meir Simcha? By quoting him in the Mishnah Berurah. Otherwise, he was the only one he quoted in the Mishnah Berurah. So he said, you know, he was Mavriyot Midosav, I don't want to make a big fuss. So that, you know what, I'm sure he's even upset at what he said to me. So I'm going to show that I have no ill feelings. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. To such a degree, and I'm going to quote him. I'm going to bring him down in my Bir Halacha. That's how the Chafetz Chaim reacted. So Therefore, we see this concept again of Mavri al Midosa, the lesson that we learned from the Gemara in Yavamas, not the swimming lesson, but the lesson that a person has to be Mevater. And we see this from the Chafetz Chaim as well, and in his lifetime. And back to, therefore, our psukim, we asked, V'tomer sari el Avram, hinei atzaran Hashem meledet, bo na'al shivchati yilai yibaneh mimeni. So now we can have a possible explanation. Why did Sarah say, perhaps I will build? I should have said, perhaps you will be built, not I will be built. So the answer could be that, what was Sarah saying? She says, look, I want to have a schus. I want to have a child. But to have a child, I obviously need a tremendous schus. I've been barren all these years. So Sarah was looking for a schus. What schus did she find? She had an ingenious idea. She thought, well, what I'll do is I'll give my maidservant to my husband so he should marry her. Now, we know that the thing that hurts or bothers a woman more than anything else is having a co-wife. In fact, in Yavamas, it's called a tzara. A tzara, it's a tzara. It's a tzara for a woman to be a second wife. So she had a genius idea. She says, I'll give Hagar, my not only stomach, but my maidservant, to my husband, and he should marry her. And that'll be a real, real nisayon, a real test for me. How am I going to react? And if I'll be able to, mavir al midosai, not stand on justice, let it go over my head, bow my head, let the waves go over my head, not make a big deal about it, take it in stride, even though it's going to be very difficult. I'm hoping, and that's good, I, ibanet mimena, I will be built mimena through Hagar. Because if I see my maidservant being married to my husband and it doesn't bother me, so then that's going to be a big schus, and perhaps through that I will be built and I will have children in the future. That's pshat over here. So it's interesting though, because one could say, well, it looks as if in the psukim though, if you go on over there, that she wasn't really successful. Because it says, Vayomer Avram al Sarah Hineji, take your shifra and do what you please with her. And because what happened? So Hagar, in fact, right away got pregnant, and it says that she dealt lightly in Sarah's eyes. And Sarah was seemingly bothered by this. And because Hagar was saying, you know, look, Rashi brings it down, I obviously am much greater than you, right? You were married so many years, you didn't have a child, I was married and right away I'm already pregnant. So obviously I'm much greater. And Abram said, look, Sarah, here, take your shifcha, do what you want with her. So what does the pasuk say? V'te'aneha Sarai v'tivrach mipaneha. So Sarah gave his manah, afflicted her, and then she ran away. So it seems like she couldn't handle this nisayon of having Hagar as her as Abram's wife, and she afflicted her. So they say that no, she didn't really afflict her. What did she do? She was still her maidservant. However, she felt it was Hagar who felt afflicted. Why? Because if you tell this person that's your maid to wash the floors, she washed the floors. But if you tell a queen to wash the floors, or force her to wash the floors, that'll be very afflicting. Why? She's not used to it. She's not that. I'm a queen. Me washing the floors. It's belittling. I can't do such a thing. So that's afflicting. So too. Hagar, Sarai didn't do anything to Hagar to afflict her. He just said, okay, do it to clean the floors. But now, being the queen, the wife of Abraham, and doing the same menial labor she was doing before, that was an affliction to her. That's for sure. And it's quite interesting, because she did run away. And it says, v'im tzamalach Hashem alein amayim, v'midbar ala ayim, v'derech shur. And Malach Hashem found her. So it's a cheap shot by the it's cute in the mashal that is given to explain the pasuk over here. There was Maisa, the Note of Yehuda says, There was once a wagon driver, and he was traveling with Gvira, a wealthy man, taking him in the wagon ramp. So they had a long journey, and on the way they stopped by this inn or whatever. So the wagon driver gets up early in the morning, couldn't sleep, and he's looking around. He says, "You know, it's not fair. Why do I have to be a wagon driver? And he used to be he's the Gvir, he's the wealthy man, right? Not fair. I deserve to, you know, treatment once in a while." So he had an idea. What did he do? He took the Gvir, the wealthy man's clothing, and he dressed himself up in his clothing. And he left his clothing, you know, down there. And he got up on the wagon, sat in the wagon, and then the wealthy person got up, Gvir, and he says, "What's going on over here? Where's my clothes?" He's looking, and he sees the wagon driver sitting in the back, saying, "No, let's go, I want to travel already." He goes, "What are you talking about? What do you mean? Yeah, so, what are you wearing my clothes for?" He goes, "What do you mean? They're my clothes. I'm the Gvir, you're the wagon driver." He goes, "Are you nuts? I'm the Gvir, you're the wagon driver." He says, "No, I don't." Anyway, the Gvir had no choice at this point. He had no clothes, so he had to put on the wagon driver's clothes. And they're fighting back and forth. So they said, "Okay, we'll have to take this to a din Torah. Right? Who is the Gvir and who is the wagon driver?" So they decided to go to the Noda Behuda. They came in, they're screaming, "I'm the wagon driver! No, you're the wagon driver! No, I'm the Gvir, you're the..." Back and forth. Screaming and yelling. They come into the office, and there's people there, and the gabbai comes in, "What's going on? What's all this commotion?" So they brings them into the Noda Behuda, and they're screaming at each other, "I'm the Gvir, no, I'm the Gvir, you're the wagon driver, nah." So he says to them, "Okay, listen, I'm quite busy right now. I can't see you today, but come tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and we'll deal with the situation." So I said, "Okay, fine." Screaming back and forth, and they leave the office. So the Noda Behuda calls over his gabbai and says, "Listen, they're going to come tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Don't you can you know let's bring him into the you know waiting room, but don't let him into me, right? Until I say so. Let them sit in the waiting room until I say so." So he says, "Okay, fine." So sure enough, the next day, 8 o'clock sharp, they're back and come to Noda Behuda, screaming, "I'm the Gvir, wagon driver, Gvir." And they go into the waiting room, and they're sitting down, and the gabbai says, "Okay, well, I'll call you when it's your turn." Fine, they're screaming back up on them. It's 8 o'clock. Sure enough, other people are coming in, and they're, you know, being let in before them. And they're saying, "What's going on?" "Well, they had certain needs, whatever, don't worry, you'll get your turn." And they're screaming back and forth. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and as the hours go by, so they're getting tired of screaming at each other, and they start sitting there. This one takes out a book, this one takes out a. They kind of, you know, are getting restless, and they're waiting, and they're not getting called. It's 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Still, they're not getting called in. By now, they've had it. They've waited so many hours already. They have, you know, they half asleep. So finally, the Noda Behuda opens up the door and screams out, "Okay, let the wagon driver come in." So the wagon driver picks up his head, jumps up, and he goes, "Oh, wait a second, no, no." And he sits down again. He realizes he made a mistake. "Ah," the Noda Behuda said, "very nice. So now we know who the wagon driver is. Give him his clothes back." So Noda Behuda says, shot over here in the pasuk, right? Hagar was saying, "I'm the Gemira, I'm the Iker wife of Avram." And Sarah says, "What are you talking about? I gave you to him. I'm the Iker wife of Avram." Sarah, right? Back and forth. So what happened? Hagar thinking she's the Iker wife, so she's now out on the way, and Malach comes. So what does it say? Vayomar Hagar Shivcha Sarai. So the Malach calls out and says, "Hagar, the Shivcha of Sarai." Right? Makes the point. Where? And she goes, oh, right? So she jumps up and she says, "Oh, here I am." And she says, "Oh, yeah, well, I was running away from Sarai, my Gevirti." Oops, I shouldn't have said that. Ksar gvirti, oops, like the wagon driver. She gave it away. Ah, so he says, you see, well, you realize you're really the shifcha. Vayomer l'malach Hashem, shuvi el gvirteich, so go back to your gvirteich, vidhitani tachas yadeh, go back and work like you were before. Because you're really the... Anyways, so that was a side point. To summarize again, so we learned today the importance of being Mavir al Midosa, and which is all part of Shotrim B'Shotrim, right? That you have to be a Shofet, check out your ways, see what you have to do, and be a Shoter to put them into action, like Sarai did. Right, she realized in order to have a schus, to have a child, she has to be mavir al midosav. So what did she do? She put it into action. She put it into action by giving Hagar to Avram, and knowing that she was going to be an Isai, that she'd be able to conquer and have a tremendous schus with that to have a child. That was a putting into action. That was the making the shoter, putting the officer into action. So that's what we have to do. And as we approach Yom HaDin, it's very important, Avoda and Elul, to check all our actions, work them through, see what needs to be done, and not only that, not only to be a shofet, but be a shoter, put them into action. And the Balei Musar say this is one of the greatest things to work on during Elul, is to be mavir al midosav. Because we know Kosh Baruch Hu works, mina keneged mina. So if we're not makpid, we don't take things seriously, and when we do averas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, you know, he could take them seriously, or he could not. He could, if we're, so we take them seriously, when people do things against us, and we stand our ground and say, no, you, it's not fair, whatever, and we're always makpid, very makpid on other people. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could act the same way, Chas V'Shalom. Say, oh yeah, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, be makpid, I'm going to stand my ground. But if we don't want a Kodesh Baruch Hu to stand on ceremony and be very makpid on us, so it's very important, and we shouldn't be makpid on others. And so that's a tremendous schus for Yom HaDin. It's a shame we should be zoiche b'din in this coming year and have a gemar chesima toiva, and it should be a year blessed with tremendous bracha and atzlacha, and the bringing the ultimate schus of the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mehira b'mehira.